Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence, the AI edition for Thursday, June 25th, 2026.
Today, we are tracking the structural transition from passive software to active autonomous agents. We are moving beyond simple generative outputs toward a world where models possess the agency to execute complex, multi-step reasoning independently.
It is no longer about what the AI says, but what it actually does.
And that shift is redefining the very nature of digital labor.
We begin by looking at the rise of agentic workflows and how chatbots are rapidly evolving into reliable autonomous coworkers. Anthropic's product team just revealed that 65% of their code now originates from Claude Tag, and today we're looking at the transition from chatbots you talk to coworkers you delegate to.
It's the shift from static prompting to agentic workflows, where the LLM isn't just generating text in a vacuum, but is part of an active observational loop.
It sounds incredibly productive, until you realize delegation is often just corporate shorthand for I'm passing this headache to a script.
But the mechanism is fundamentally different this time. We're moving away from the destination website model, where you go to a specific UI to prompt a model, toward what is essentially an integrated asynchronous team member. Take Claude Tag, for example. It resides within your existing Slack workspace, meaning the AI has the persistent context of your team's discussions without you having to manually copy-paste data into a new window.
So instead of a brilliant, isolated genius in a separate room, it's more like a very eager, slightly intrusive intern who lives in your group chat.
Worth noting, that's the move from single-user tools to organizational dependencies. The goal is to eliminate the context duplication problem. We're seeing a rise in headless AI employees, custom-built harnesses that turn any standard computer interface into an agentic workstation. You aren't just prompting, you are defining high-level goals and allowing the agent autonomy over the execution steps.
I suppose that's great for the boring stuff, but I'm still a bit wary of the human mimicry aspect I've been hearing about.
You're referring to the way OpenAI's Record and Rebel feature for Codex is changing training. Rather than engineers writing complex, manual prompts to teach an AI a new skill, the AI simply observes a screen recording of a human performing a workflow. It converts those pixels and clicks into repeatable, executable skills. It bypasses the need for APIs entirely by interacting with computer interfaces exactly as a human would.
Which sounds like a very clever way to automate tasks on platforms like Instagram or Facebook without ever actually asking for permission via an API.
It is a strategic loophole. If an agent can navigate a UI via vision, it can bypass traditional API blocks. However, there is a massive technical bottleneck there. The Last Week in AI report noted that negative transferring computer use agents is a real danger. Training models on massive, noisy, crowdsourced datasets like AgentNet actually caused success rates to plummet from 26% to just 9% because the task structures were too simplistic and noisy.
So the more human we make the training data, the more confused the AI gets. It's like trying to teach a child physics using only TikTok comments.
That's why the industry is shifting focus from the raw intelligence of the model to the harness or the scaffolding around it. As the AI Daily Brief argued, the real enterprise value isn't in the model itself, but in the creation of a learning loop, where every correction and every decision made by the agent becomes a training signal, accumulating into what we call token capital.
Token capital. That sounds like a very expensive way to describe a very organized collection of mistakes and fixes.
But it's proprietary. If your company's agentic workflow learns from your specific messy real-world data, that's a moat. The bottleneck for these agents isn't whether the model can think, but whether the data architecture is capable of placing proprietary information in the right operational environment. Latent Space, the AI Engineer podcast, highlighted this, noting that the competitive moat is shifting from reasoning capabilities to data architecture. We are seeing traditional software being rewritten as thin layers of agents slotted on top of optimized data pipelines.
So the software of the future is just a thin smart skin stretched over a massive automated data plumbing system.
That's a great way to put it. And to make that skin work, we need more than just APIs, which are often too brittle for an agent to rely on. This is where the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, comes in. Think of traditional APIs like country-specific power outlets. You need a specific plug for every single software connection. MCP acts as a universal adapter. It's a standardized, self-describing layer that allows an agent to discover and understand how to use a tool without a human having to write manual integration code every time.
So instead of teaching the AI how to use a specific hammer, we're just giving it a manual that explains every tool in the workshop.
And it's much more efficient. Using MCP is far more token efficient than computer use methods, where the AI has to process continuous, high-bandwidth screenshots of a screen to figure out what's happening. MCP allows the agent to interact with structured documentation. It moves the burden from rigid, error-prone integration to a standardized discovery process.
It sounds much more stable, but I can't help but wonder about the security implications of giving an agent computer use capabilities. If it can move the mouse and type in a terminal, it's not just a chatbot, it's a potential intruder.
That is the critical second-order risk. When you grant models access to a browser or a bash terminal, you open the door to indirect prompt injection. An attacker could place a malicious instruction on a web page that the agent, while browsing, reads and executes. It could trigger unauthorized actions like database erasure. We're seeing a tension between security and usability. A lack of trust in AI vision and tool use is actually starving the models of the very real-world data they need to improve.
It's a classic catch-22. We won't give them the keys to the house because we're afraid they'll burn it down, but they'll never learn how to be good housekeepers if they're stuck outside on the porch.
And the security focus has to evolve. It can't just be about general-purpose safety anymore. It has to be about protecting complex software ecosystems. Some researchers like Zico Coulter and Matt Fredrickson from Gray Swan suggest treating security as an optimization problem, using small, specialized filter models to enforce policy without the massive overhead of the larger models.
There's also the issue of the human in the loop. If we move from doers to managers, are we just preparing ourselves for a massive wave of automation bias?
That's a huge concern. Hannah Fry has pointed out that as we move to an action observation loop, the human role changes to overseeing these automated workflows. The risk is that we stop verifying the work. But the flip side is that agentic automation could solve the manpower bottleneck in fields like formal software verification, where the work is too repetitive and expensive for humans to execute at scale.
I suppose it's easier to manage a team of specialized, low-cost agents than it is to hire 1,000 engineers to check every line of code.
But you need a new skill set for that. You aren't just a coder or a writer anymore, you are an orchestrator. You have to manage non-human mistakes and establish reputation-based trust protocols for agents that might be unreliable. The industry is moving toward a meta-harness architecture, a way to prevent the need to manually switch models, interfaces, and authentication methods every time you start a new task.
It's all very ambitious, provided the electricity stays on and the servers don't decide to take a vacation.
Ultimately, the transition to true autonomous AI is constrained by the physical. It requires integration with energy production, factories, and robotics. We aren't just talking about better software, we're talking about a fundamental restructuring of how digital intelligence interacts with physical infrastructure.
CTOs need to stop looking for the perfect model and start building the infrastructure to capture every single mistake their agents make. Just keep an eye on the rise of agent-to-agent permissions, because that's where the real security cracks will appear. But this expansion of digital autonomy leads us to a much more regulated landscape, one where the legal fallout from a hallucinating employee is about to get very complicated. On one side, you have the frontier labs trying to build the most powerful, unaligned intelligence possible. On the other, you have a U.S. administration that seems increasingly ready to pull the plug on any model it deems a political liability. This is the great model shakeup, and Alex, looking at the recent crackdown on Anthropic's Fable and Mythos models, which side are you betting on?
It's hard to bet on the labs right now, because the mechanism of control has shifted from technical safety to executive fiat. The U.S. government has essentially moved toward a de facto licensing regime by using export controls to take Anthropic's Fable 5 offline, effectively bypassing the legislative framework and judicial oversight entirely.
So it's not that the model became too smart or too dangerous in a sci-fi sense, it's just that someone in the West Wing didn't like the vibes.
Precisely. Last week in AI suggests the removal of Fable 5 access likely stems from a breakdown in the relationship between Anthropic's leadership and the U.S. administration, rather than an inherent inability to fix specific jailbreaks. We're seeing a shift where political deference is becoming a prerequisite for model deployment.
That is terrifying. We've gone from how do we stop a model from building a bioweapon to how do we stop a model from upsetting the Secretary of Defense.
And that's exactly the tension. The actual catalyst for the Fable 5 ban might have been a classic corporate maneuver. There are allegations, specifically from researchers like Yeadon, that Amazon's security research influenced the government. The idea is that Amazon identified a specific jailbreak vulnerability and briefed the U.S. Treasury to trigger this regulatory intervention, essentially using security research as a weaponized market strategy to delegitimize a competitor.
Wait, so the safety of the model is being used as a pretext for a trade war between trillion-dollar companies?
It's a feature, not a bug, of the current political economy. When you look at the technical side, Fable 5 was actually being hyper-conservative. It was so afraid of misuse that it would refuse basic biology questions and just reroute users back to the older Opus 4.8 model. It was essentially a self-imposed bottleneck. But the government didn't care about the technical regression, they cared about the breach of control.
Which brings us to the kill switch problem. If the US can just decide, actually, we don't like how this model handles certain keywords, then the entire concept of a frontier model as a reliable commercial product evaporates.
That's the fundamental shift. The U.S. government's ability to implement an AI kill switch via export controls has transformed frontier AI from a commercial product into a geopolitical lever. This forces allies like the UK and the EU to weigh the benefits of U.S. innovation against the risk of sudden technological dependency. We're seeing this play out in real time with the recent order for SK Telecom to revoke access to the Mythos model due to China-related concerns.
And I assume that doesn't leave much room for the open-source enthusiasts to breathe, either.
It actually does the opposite. The U.S. export controls are inadvertently driving global demand for open-source and open-weight alternatives like DeepSeek or GLM. If you can't trust that a closed model API will be available tomorrow because a regulator might flip a switch, you start building your mission-critical workflows around models where you actually control the weights.
It's like the difference between renting a house and owning the land. But even if you own the model, you're still part of the global stack.
Right, and that's where the strategic tension is peaking. The AI Daily Brief reports that Microsoft's plan to use fine-tuned DeepSeek V4 for Copilot CARC reveals a massive contradiction. The U.S. government is restricting frontier model weights as national security assets, yet major U.S. enterprises are simultaneously integrating Chinese stack models into their global productivity infrastructure to maintain efficiency.
I honestly cannot tell if we are witnessing the birth of a new era of intelligence or just the most expensive version of a middle school grudge match in human history.
It's both. The technical reality is that achieving total jailbreak resistance is a theoretical impossibility. So when the government imposes these mandates, they aren't solving a security problem. They are creating a permanent, unmanageable bottleneck for deployment. This is forcing a massive resource shift toward superalignment and defensive research, because the bottleneck isn't just the code anymore, it's the permission to run it.
The developers are stuck in this loop where they either over-censor their models until they're useless, or they risk being shut down by a non-technical official at the White House who reacted to a single bad report.
The Cognitive Revolution notes that this is often driven by a security engineer bypass, where a non-technical official reacts to a jailbreak report without any technical context, leading to catastrophic policy errors. This creates a landscape where companies might eventually pivot into hedge fund models, where the primary value is using high intelligence models for private wealth generation rather than public deployment, simply to avoid the scrutiny of the public-facing regulatory eye.
It's a move toward the shadows. If the only way to be safe from regulation is to stay out of the light, then the most advanced intelligence on the planet is going to become a private, unregulated utility for the ultra-wealthy.
And that's the ultimate risk. We end up with a bifurcated world where the official models are lobotomized by regulation, and the true frontier models are running in a black box, far beyond the reach of any international oversight.
Enterprise architects will start prioritizing access predictability over raw intelligence for any workflow that can't afford a sudden shutdown.
Watch for the next major U.S. export control update to see if it targets the underlying cloud infrastructure itself, which would effectively end the era of globalized AI development.
But this regulatory friction is only one part of the struggle. We also have to look at who is actually building the physical engines that power these models. I tried to upgrade my home Wi-Fi router last weekend, and I spent 3 hours just trying to figure out which frequency would stop my microwave from killing the signal. It turns out even for a single house, managing invisible infrastructure is a nightmare.
That scale is nothing compared to what's happening in the AI stack right now. We are moving from a world of simple software competition to a massive vertical hardware arms race, where every major player is trying to own everything from the silicon to the liquid cooling.
It's not just about who has the smartest model anymore. It's about who owns the actual atoms.
Stepping back, look at OpenAI. They are moving toward a full-stack optimization playbook, much like Google with their TPUs. They are working with Broadcom to develop Jalapeno, a custom inference chip designed specifically to slash the massive operational costs that are currently eating their profitability.
It sounds like every tech giant is suddenly deciding they want to be a semiconductor company. It's like a group of architects all deciding they also need to start mining their own iron ore and forging their own nails just to make sure the building stays up.
And that's exactly the strategy. Qualcomm is following suit, but they're playing a different angle. As noted in AI in Business, Qualcomm's $3.9 billion acquisition of Modular is a play to secure the critical software layer, specifically for CPUs, GPUs, and NPUs, rather than trying to outmuscle NVIDIA on raw hardware alone.
So NVIDIA is the king of the hardware, but everyone is trying to build a moat around the software that makes that hardware actually useful.
There's a signal here, the competition is even hitting the cloud layer. AWS is no longer just renting out capacity, they are selling their Trainium chips to external buyers. This is a massive shift because they are effectively sacrificing long-term, bundled cloud revenue to capture immediate liquidity from the supply crunch. They're targeting an annual run rate of $50 billion, which puts them in direct confrontation with NVIDIA's dominance.
But this all feels incredibly precarious. If everyone is building these massive interconnected dependencies, one broken link could tank the whole thing.
There's a real risk of a cascading failure in the late 2020s. If a slowdown in data collection leads to a drop in CapEx, it could trigger a massive decline in stock valuations across the entire interconnected ecosystem. It's why we're seeing a push for sovereign infrastructure.
You mean like the AI bomb shelter I keep hearing about?
Right. As the AI Daily Brief points out, local AI deployment is becoming a strategic hedge. Companies are moving toward local hardware to mitigate risks like vendor lock-in or sudden service shutdowns driven by geopolitical forces. However, it's a massive trade-off. You eliminate token costs, but you inherit the human token cost, the massive overhead of managing your own hardware, security, and specialized personnel.
So you trade a monthly subscription fee for a permanent headache and a massive electricity bill.
It's also about geopolitical de-risking. We're seeing a massive realignment. Intel is transforming into a geopolitical asset because its US-based foundry capacity is exactly what Apple needs as they move production away from Taiwan. Even Nvidia is getting defensive, optimizing their new Blackwell architectures specifically to steer the industry toward their proprietary inference architecture.
It's getting so complex that even the data centers are becoming political battlegrounds. I heard there's even worry about people sabotaging US infrastructure to help adversaries.
There is. There's a growing concern that anti-data center movements in the US could be leveraged by China to create a compute crunch, forcing the US to outsource essential AI processing to the very adversaries we are trying to compete with.
Enterprise leaders need to audit their dependency risks before the next major export control hits the news.
Watch for any sudden surge in large-scale, multi-year power procurement deals, as that will signal the industry is finally committing to a permanent, localized physical footprint.
But once we have the hardware and the power secured, the real challenge shifts to how this massive computing power actually interacts with the physical world, like in the field of medicine.
Maya, we need to talk about the fact that the intelligence in AI is finally getting a physical body and a biological blueprint.
Is this the part where you tell me my smart fridge is about to perform surgery on my leftovers?
Not quite, but we are seeing a massive convergence between biological modeling and physical automation. Take AlphaFold 3. John Jumper has moved us from just predicting protein shapes to a protein cinematic universe, where the model predicts how proteins interact with DNA, RNA, and even small molecules like drugs. It's shifting drug design from years of trial and error to a computational starting point that can compress experimental timelines into minutes.
We're moving from guessing which molecule fits to simulating the entire molecular heist before we even touch a pipette.
We can trace that further. It's not just about digital structures, it's about deployment. In radiology, Prashant Warrior of Kura, AI is seeing AI move from simple image recognition to end-to-end management. Their vision language models integrate X-rays with text reports to act as a decision support tool. In low-resource settings, they're already using it for autonomous TB screening in dozens of countries without a human in the loop. Within the next 5 to 10 years, we're looking at an AI-first primary care model where AI handles initial triage and even triggers follow-up CT scans automatically.
I can see the trajectory. First, an algorithm reads your X-ray, then it autonomously schedules your biopsy, and finally, it sends you a push notification that your cholesterol is too high and orders you a kale smoothie.
The goal is shifting lung cancer diagnosis from an 80% late-stage discovery rate to a 50-50 split between early and late detection. This expansion into the physical is also hitting the industrial sector. We're seeing humanoid robots from companies like Unitree and Figure being deployed in BMW factories. The real driver here isn't just automating tasks, but using these robots as mobile sensors to collect massive amounts of data from diverse physical environments to train the next generation of models.
It's a massive leap in capability.
It really is. Even the architecture is changing. As Jumper noted in a recent MLSD discussion, the success of AlphaFold actually challenges the bitter lesson that general-purpose scaling is all that matters. He argues that in biology, integrating specific human hypotheses like geometric constraints into the architecture is what actually drives the breakthroughs.
Pharmaceutical R&D budgets are about to be heavily redirected towards specialized biological engineering. Just watch for the first instance of an AI-triggered diagnostic workflow that significantly moves the needle on late-stage cancer survival rates. But this massive integration of data also brings up a much more contentious battle over who actually owns the weights behind these specialized models. I'm starting to think the era of the US-based AI duopoly is more of a polite suggestion than a reality, especially with these new Chinese open-weight models moving in on OpenAI and Anthropic.
It's more than a suggestion, Maya. We're seeing a fundamental shift in the market's economic architecture. InterConnect's AI noted that the release of GLM-5.2 last week functioned like an economic dagger for frontier labs, allowing Chinese models to capture the economic underbelly of the market by providing cheap, high-performance intelligence for routine tasks, effectively forcing U.S. labs to retreat into much higher-margin specialized domains.
Instead of a head-to-head fight for everything, we're just splitting the world into expensive prestige and cheap utility.
So here's the picture. It's not just about being cheap. It's about functional superiority in specific niches. The AI Daily Brief reported that GLM-5.2 is actually outperforming Claude Opus 4.8 in web development because it utilizes Tailwind CSS in 91% of sessions compared to only 57% for Opus. It's moving from mere hype to a DeepSeek R1 moment, where the gap in specialized tasks like coding and web design is closing rapidly.
But isn't there a massive lead in training data for the US giants?
Not as much as you'd think. The Dworkish podcast suggested that progress is currently driven by expanding data distribution rather than just sample efficiency, meaning open source models can close the gap in months by distilling data from public APIs. Plus, as the AI Daily Brief highlighted, ByteDance's Seedance 2.5 might be building a recursive training loop using TikTok's massive user-generated corpus that Google simply can't replicate.
If you're a developer who wants to avoid anti-open science restrictions or even government-mandated shutdowns, you just move your entire workflow to a model you can run locally.
Precisely, the rise of sovereign AI means organizations can post-train models for their own specific workflows without ever touching a closed-source API.
Enterprise architects will stop overpaying for Claude tokens and start investing in local, fine-tuned weights for specialized coding pipelines. Watch for the next performance benchmark for the 3 billion parameter Vive Thinker to see if these tiny models can break into the mobile hardware market. As we wrap up this week, the thread pulling through every headline from the rise of Claude Tag to the deep integration of Alpha Fold 3 is the evaporation of the interface. We are witnessing the end of AI as a destination you visit via chat box and the beginning of AI as a pervasive, invisible layer of the operating system itself. It's no longer about the eloquence of the output, but the reliability of the execution.
The data tells a story. The real-world implication here isn't just for developers, but for the C-suite of the global enterprise. The fundamental calculus for CTOs is shifting from how much can this model tell us, to how much of our proprietary workflow can we safely hand over to a system that has the keys to our environment. When you see Qualcomm acquiring Modular or Oz targeting a $50 billion run rate for Trainium, they aren't just selling chips and clouds. They are betting that the future of enterprise value lies in owning the proprietary pipelines where these agents live and breathe. The strategic advantage is migrating from the intelligence of the model to the integrity of the data architecture surrounding it.
It's a high-stakes move toward vertical integration, where the line between software capability and hardware availability is completely blurred.
It is.
And if you want to know if this shift toward autonomous integrated utility is actually sticking, or if we're just seeing a temporary surge in agentic hype, watch the next performance benchmark for the Model Context Protocol. If we see widespread seamless adoption of MCP across diverse third-party toolsets, it confirms that the industry has successfully moved past the isolated genius phase and into a functional, interoperable ecosystem. If it fails to scale, we're likely stuck in a fragmented landscape of digital silos for much longer.
Thanks for joining us this Thursday. We'll see you next week.